You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the NL West. I'm Allison Sutter from MLB.com, and as we look at the way that the National League West is shaping up, it was kind of a rough patch for just about everybody in this division, losing a few more games than winning, and that is going to happen over the course of the season. Things are a little maybe tighter in the standings, and the Dodgers are still enjoying the exploits of Jock Peterson, and the Giants are enjoying the success of their starting rotation, which was, as we know, the biggest question mark going into the season. And the Padres are still trying to figure out who they are and what they have and fighting to get above 500. So that is a brief overview of the top teams in the NL West. Ken, on one hand, you guys are in Colorado as we take this. On the other hand, a 477-foot home run is pretty impressive. And, of course, we're talking about Jock Peterson. So even, two home runs, very impressive, according to StatCast, just moonshots. And I guess even though we're talking about mile-high air, it's still pretty impressive what this kid is doing.
Yeah, you know, he's been hitting home runs all season, but he doesn't get cheated on his swings, that's for sure. He doesn't cut him back to strikes either. He swings for the fences, and he squares up the ball more often than most rookies. And you put that combination together with the thin air here, the ball really, really sails. I mean, it only counts one run, but it's pretty exciting for the fans and the Dodgers. It's an unusual combination in the leadoff spot. When you got a guy who's basically walked, strikes out and hits home runs, but his on-base percentage is still close to 400. So he gets it done. It's not the conventional way, but the Dodgers aren't complaining when they, having lost both the right and left starting left fielders and starting right fielders to injuries, as long as most of their pitchers, they're pretty happy with getting the performance that they're getting out of a rookie like Peterson.
Do they ever talk about what he projects to be as far as where he would hit in the lineup long term? I mean, I know that he's a rookie and he's, you know, they're just figuring out who he is and what they have. But like you said, he doesn't really kind of fit the mold of a prototypical leadoff hitter. Do you think that someday he could be more of a middle of the order guy?
Well, I'm sure that if he continues to be a 30 or 40 home run guy, he probably won't stay in leadoff spot. He started the season in the eighth spot. So before the season's out, he could be all over the place. But they don't really have a better leadoff option, and that's why he's up there. Again, he's not the prototype. But nowadays, what is the prototype? You know, maybe a V. Gordon, he's really more the exception than the rule. So they'll take what they can get from him. Now, when the middle of the order hitters come back, Yasiel Puig, and you got Crawford, who will be probably second or fifth. Neither one of them really projects as a leadoff hitter. So I'm guessing as long as as he keeps getting on base, and as long as he keeps producing, he'll stay up there.
As long as we're talking about lineups, let's talk a little bit about Jimmy Rollins. So he started off the season hitting second, and then that became seventh, and then it became eighth. So he seemed to handle it really well, and he's a veteran guy, very mature, very diplomatic. But is it alarming at all to the team that he's really not being productive and wherever he hits, and he's got like a batting average just above 200? So is it too early to start worrying about him? And given his age, maybe not. What do they think about Jimmy Rollins?
Yeah, of course they're worried. He's in the last year of his contract. His offensive numbers have been in decline in recent years anyway. It's been 6 or 7 years since he was an MVP. So, his best days are behind him. He's played pretty well defensively. But offensively, it's been a struggle. And he's become pretty much a pull hitter left-handed, and then they shift on him. He hasn't been able to overcome that either. They've got Corey Sager, who's knocking on the door down at AAA, tearing it up after being promoted from AA. So, sure, the writing's on the wall. He knows it. Rollins has talked about it. He accepts it. He still feels he has some good baseball left in him. And they like the veteran presence. He doesn't panic. And, you know, maybe he could, you know, heat up as the weather does. I'm sure they're hoping that. If not, like I said, Corey Seager is knocking on the door. So at some point they may have to make that switch. You know, they're still clinging the first place. They've lost about five games of their lead. But, you know, to put it all on Jimmy Rollins would be a little unfair. You know, they've had a lot of issues losing starting position players to starting pitchers, so it's not all his fault.
And it sounds like Yasiel Puig is slowly inching his way back, but Don Mattingly doesn't even want to pinpoint a possible return time. So just maybe we'll expect for him to be out maybe a considerable amount of time, not considerable, but a while longer. He seems to be lingering a little bit.
Well, again, take your guess. You're welcome to it. He went out on a rehab assignment once, got shut down. So, you know, he's played 11 games this year, and they've played 50-something. So, you know, trying to guess when he's going to be back is pure speculation. He's making progress. He's able to run now. And, you know, they're not getting their hopes up until they see him in a uniform with the team. So, you know, it could be in a week, but they thought that a month ago.
So I wanted to ask you about the Dodgers seem to be reading some stories that you've written just about, they seem to be feeling like they're not maybe getting the same calls as the other team, that maybe the umpires are missing a lot of calls in these games. AJ Ellis was recently thrown out of the game for arguing about an inconsistent strike zone. And your observations, I mean, do you feel like they have a beef here? Do you think that there's clearly we're not calling the umpires out for, like, conspiring against the Dodgers, but it just it seems like they're just they're getting a lot more angry than maybe a lot of teams around the league. Is there anything to this?
There's something to the fact that they've been frustrated about it. If you're asking me, are the umpires taking it out on them and not other teams? I couldn't say that. I don't know. They were whining. You know, I think it was frustration. They didn't play well in St. Louis, and they lost 2-3. You know, I just marked that down as whining. You know, they're not the first or the last team. You know, there've been a lot of managers have complained about the instant replay rules and the way that's been executed this year. Mattingly's been very vocal about that. But as far as balls and strikes calls, I think this has been going on longer than this year, and I think it's involve more teams than just the Dodgers, and it's probably mostly frustration.
Yeah, it's a guy like Don Mattingly. I mean, he's very respected. He's very, very even keeled when he presents himself. I mean, you tend to lean toward taking what he says as maybe having some substance because of who he is and just how he represents himself and the team. So that's what it gives me pause. It's like there's got to be, you know, something to this, that maybe they are just missing some calls. I don't think it's on purpose because it's the Dodgers, but maybe they are, you know, just kind of having some bad luck in that area.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could probably ask Lloyd McClendon, you know, about umpires. I mean, you know, this isn't just about Don Mattingly, and it isn't just about the Dodgers. I mean, this has been going on as long as there have been umpires, you know, and I think it'll pass. I think there might have been a bad weekend. You know, umpires have bad games, too. And, you know, I'm sure they even get into slumps, and then it passes. I know that there was a team meeting when the club got into Colorado and that issue came up, and I think, you know, pretty much the message was, all right, time to stop whining and let's start winning. And so I think you're kind of isolating, you know, one bad series, one bad weekend. They probably didn't handle it very well, and that's behind them now as much as it is any club, and I'm sure it'll pop up again, as it will with every other club, too.
I would pay money to see Don Mattingly have a rant that Lloyd McClendon just went on. But I don't think we're going to see that anytime soon. So, Ken, thanks so much. Appreciate your time. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, thanks, Allison.
Here for my weekly conversation with Chris Haft, who is covering the surging San Francisco Giants. Good times are happening in San Francisco, as is usually the case. Chris, I want to start with Travis Ishikawa. So, kind of an interesting. This is one of the reasons why the Giants are as good as they are, is because they have depth. And keeping Ishikawa in the organization, even though they designated him for assignment not too long ago, but he has accepted an assignment to AAA, and it sounds like Bruce Bochy is ecstatic that he's going to stay in the organization, and everybody sounded a little surprised that they were able to keep him.
Yeah, you know, Allison, he kind of bounced around a little bit a few years ago, and I don't know if that made him, I'm trying to think like ball clubs think, which is kind of dangerous, but, I don't know if that made him, quote-unquote, damaged goods, so to speak. And I know that's an awfully cynical way of looking at things, but, he is a little bit up in age, for a ball player, of course, and that may have diminished some teams' enthusiasm for picking him up. On the other hand, of course, everybody remembers what he did last postseason. It wasn't just the home run that put them, into the World Series. He got a couple other big hits down the stretch and in the postseason. So, he's proven he can hit when it counts. When it gets to, if he's not called up before September 1st, I know he'll do a great job for the team down this, in the final month of the season, if they're still in contention.
Right, and we have to talk about this May that this team just had. I think that they were maybe a win shy of the best May they had had in like four decades or something like that. 21-9, if my calculations are correct. 8 complete games, 9 shutouts. So, clearly we know how good they were throughout the month, but the fact that the pitching has gotten itself together as much as it has is pretty staggering, and they have to feel like, that was sort of the big question mark going into spring training and then going into the season. They were pretty comfortable with all the other elements of the team, so I would imagine that this is just, they've got to be just ecstatic with how that whole thing has come together with the pitching.
Yeah, I think, Allison, what they're most ecstatic about is being able to weather the injuries, and we've talked about this a little bit before, weather the injuries to Matt Cain and Jake Peavy. They entered the season as number 2 and number 3 starters, respectively, and to be able to overcome that by getting very good performances from Chris Heston and Ryan Vogelsong. As you mentioned before, the depth. They had that depth in the rotation, which is something they haven't always had. But certainly it's certainly there now, and their performance is proving it.
So Matt Cain, let's talk about him a little bit. Is he still slated for a rehab start? Of course, we are recording this the day before he reportedly is to make that rehab start. So I guess when people are listening to this, he will have already made it or maybe not. So is he still on track for the rehab start this week?
He is on track, but they're going to take it really slow with him. If things go well, will the Giants see him before the end of the year? Oh, of course, but they're going to take it easy with him. That's for sure. They don't want any recurrence. They want him to come back at 100%.
Oh, really? So you think this will extend not just beyond a normal time, but maybe an extensive amount of time doing the rehab?
Well, I just think they won't rush it. Is what I was trying to say. I should have boiled it down a little more. They're not going to rush him, especially with Heston and Vogelsong pitching capably.
And with Jake Peavy, so they've completely, sounds like they're backing off of that, and he sounds like he's not coming back anytime soon.
Yeah, that's a tough go. And there again, they've got him signed for next year. I think they have to hope that they don't end up eating $24 million, but it's funny. I don't think anybody's complaining about it because they've won 3 World Series in 5 years. Now, when they, they signed free agents in the past and maybe they wouldn't produce, people would howl. But I think everybody accepts it as, to use a favorite Brian Sabian phrase, the cost of doing business.
Right. Yeah, that's true. It's not going to put them in the poorhouse, certainly, and not every deal and decision is going to work out. And it's just whether you can actually overcome that. I find Tim Hudson to be an interesting guy. I was looking at his day by day just throughout the season. So it's better than I think, I don't know. I mean, he's definitely better than I was predicting he would be. And he had a really bad start recently in Colorado. And if you take that away, and of course you really can't take that away because it is part of his record, but if you kind of take that one game away, he's had really good overall numbers. He's not going to win any Cy Young, but he certainly is. Has kept them in every game and is very steady. And that, I guess that's just got it. I mean, he's approaching his 40th birthday, but maybe we're making too much out of age and numbers. But he doesn't seem to be lacking in anything.
Allison, he can still pitch. That's really, I guess, the way to sum it up. He's smart. He doesn't have an excess of stuff, but he does have an excess of smarts. That's for sure. And when he can command it, you know, keep it in the lower, you know, regions of the strike zone, you know, he can be just about as good as anybody still. No, you're right. You can't throw out that start in Colorado. And it's funny you bring that up because that was about – I've covered him a couple of seasons now, one season in Oakland and then last season here. So I'm not pretending that I'm a big Tim Hudson expert. But after that start in Colorado, 8 runs or whatever it was, that was as down as I've seen him. You know, this is a guy who has supreme confidence, and he was just, very, very sullen, morose, not mean to the media at all, but I think he was just really disappointed in himself after that one. And, you know, since then he's, come back strong, which is, what you want to see out of guys. But, I think the start in Colorado, maybe he rethought things a little bit after that performance, and, it's obviously for the better.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I'm just looking at the line score here. So we can say, it was a Colorado start. You really can't put too much stock into that. But he didn't actually allow any home runs in this game. So around 8 earned runs on 6 hits and only walked 2. So what was happening?
That day in Colorado?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not putting you on the spot, I hope, but it's 3.2 innings and no home runs and 8 home runs and only 6 hits. So it sounds like they were just having a little, I guess, merry-go-round session with him.
Yeah, well, with a guy like him, if he's a little bit off, he's going to be a lot off. That's the one thing I'll say. So he almost has to be. Not perfect, but he has to be pretty. He certainly relies on precision. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, I'm not picking on Kentucky, but I think he's a peach of a guy. Brandon Crawford. He doesn't really get much credit. You don't hear a lot about him. But what a steady player. Does he not get a lot of? What do people talk about him a lot out there? And how can you kind of place value on what he brings to the team?
Immeasurable. You talk about him being a steady player. It might be partly because he's such a steady guy. Very even keeled, very even tempered. I think the most emotion I've seen him express is when his little girls are around. You know, he's a devoted father is a understatement. He's just a great guy. And playing wise, but as good a guy as he is, he's just as much to that degree a professional on the field. He's always been, ever since he was a rookie, he's had excellent defensive skills. He got sent down in the middle of his rookie year, which I thought was a big mistake by the Giants, and I think they paid for it by missing the playoffs that year. Instead of having a veteran at shortstop, I think they knew he would come around with the bat eventually, and now he's starting to. I think this is just the not the start of a fruitful career, but the entering a new phase of that of a successful career.
Here with Corey Brock, who is covering these up and down Padres for our lovely website. And I think we're on a little bit of an upswing, Corey, if I am looking at the results correctly.
Yeah, it depends on when we talk, I guess, Allison. It's really variable from day to day, week to week with these guys. And yeah, you called it correctly, up and down. That's what these guys have been so far. So yeah, it's been an interesting ride so far. They could look like the best team in baseball one day, and the next day they could struggle mightily. So still searching for some consistency.
Let's talk about Tyson Ross a little bit. An interesting sort of analysis that I saw while reading all of the Padres coverage. So not quite the same last year. Last year he was an all-star. This year, just the numbers just aren't quite as good. Is he a mystery? Is he still kind of developing into what he will eventually be, or what's the difference between this year and last year?
Yeah, and you know, he was so good last year that maybe it's a little unfair to expect that again. And you really break down his numbers, he was probably one of the most dominant pitchers in the National League last year, and it wasn't really reflective in his record, and we shouldn't be looking at pitchers' records anyway to be as a true indicator as to how good they are. But you know, the ERA, the strikeouts, the hits per nine, really good last year. Made his first All-Star team. Just really dominant stuff. It's been pretty good at times this year. Just kind of a tick off from where it was. You know, one of his troubles, Allison, is controlling the running game and, you know, being able to keep runners honest at first base. You know, a lot of guys get good jumps off him and, you know, kind of sets the wheels in motion, so to speak, for getting the other team's running game going. And, you know, when they get runners on, and that can kind of force the issue a little bit and kind of puts the catchers behind the eight ball a little bit and makes things tough on them. So, but that kind of gets you into a conundrum there because, you know, you don't want to really change your mechanics dramatically to, you know, to try and hold guys on a little bit at the risk of losing your stuff or, you know, losing some of the things that have made you good. So there has to be kind of a give and take there a little bit. Maybe you try and alter your set times. Maybe you just throw over a little bit more to try and keep guys honest. But some of the things he's kind of working through moving forward. But, you know, the walks are up a little bit. The ERA is up a tick. But, you know, he's still a very good pitcher. And, you know, I think the Padres feel like he's going to be fine moving forward.
Yeah, and the important thing for a pitcher is run support, which he'd not gotten a ton of in May, which I think is probably a month that the team would maybe like to push aside a little bit. But they were shut out six times in May. So, I mean, it's not like pitchers are out there thinking about how many runs the team has scored for him. But at the same time, when you're thinking that you have to be absolutely perfect or else you have no shot at winning this game, that can get a little stressful.
Yeah, and these guys are, you know, they're pretty pragmatic about it. And, you know, certainly they never call out their teammates, even if they ever wanted to, about, you know, lack of run support. And Tyson Ross knows this better than anyone from last year. I mean, they really didn't score any runs for him last year. And this year the guy is Andrew Kashner, who for some reason they haven't scored a lot of runs for, even though the offense is generally much better than it was a year ago, or I should say is better, not markedly better, and certainly not as better as they thought it would be. I think these guys maybe feel like, you know, in some cases, maybe one or two mistakes are going to be tough to overcome. But I will say, you know, at least with the offense of the Padres this year, it's certainly been a little bit more resilient. They've shown they could overcome some deficits. They could score runs early. They could score runs late. So I don't think maybe the pitchers feel like, you know, they get down 2-0 early, let's say, that they're completely buried like they were a year ago. So at least from that standpoint, I think they feel like they're always going to be in a game and they could still kind of pitch to their strength.
I want to talk about Despaigne, and of course I'm going to keep up our tradition of not attempting to say his first name, but you can go ahead and do that. A really solid win over the Pirates recently. So what do you think about him?
Yeah, well, the manager calls him Despy, Allison, so you could just call him Despy. But, you know, Dreisamer Despaigne, yeah. You know what's funny is he became the first Padres starting pitcher to complete eight innings the other day, which is completely ironic given that he wasn't even in the rotation to begin the season. And, you know, this is a guy that's filled in the rotation now for the second time, this time for Brandon Morrow. And, you know, there are times when he gets hit hard and times when he is lights out, and he's been a much better pitcher traditionally at Petco Park than he has on the road. But, you know, he's thrown awfully well. You know, Brandon Moore is about ready to come off the disabled list here in maybe another week or so. And I assume Despaigne will slide back in long relief. But, you know, he's a fun guy to watch. You know, he's a Cuban. He throws a lot of different pitches, some varying arm angles. And last year, you know, I think there was kind of a trick component to how he pitched. And what I mean by that is, like I said, you know, he threw like, you know, 14 different curveballs. And, you know, just like a lot of different arm angles, a lot of different grips. But I think this year when he's been successful, he's thrown a lot of fastballs. He's had a lot more conviction with his fastball. And I think that's something that really emphasized to him, to not be, to use Bud Black's words, don't be such a trickster anymore. Just pitch. Be a, you know, show some conviction with your fastball. Pitch off your fastball, and then you could use those other things. I mean, he throws this Ephus curveball, which is always fun to watch, especially, you know, Allison, when it shows up on game day and it says, you know, Ephus, 68 miles an hour. I love that. But, you know, totally. That's all fine and dandy, but you certainly can't live off that. But, you know, he's been a welcome relief for them, especially, you know, when he first filled in for Ian Kennedy when he went down early in the year, and now for Brandon Morrow. You know, these teams talk ad nauseum about pitching depth, and some are able to cover it better than others. But, you know, he's really saved them here in the, you know, the first 2 months of the season, being able to cover those innings. We cover them pretty well.
And, I mean, it's not like pitchers or anybody that's in the big leagues needs extra motivation. But, goodness, I mean, he's trying to prove himself as a guy who should be in the rotation all the time. So this is just a golden opportunity for him, regardless of the fact that I'm sure he doesn't want his teammates to be going down. But you have to, you know, grab the opportunity while you can.
Yeah, and you could certainly make things a lot tougher on the manager, the coaching staff, and the front office by, you know, pitching your butt off and doing what he did the other day against the Pirates. You know, one run over eight innings. You know, that's a sure enough way to hold on to a spot in the rotation, or at the very least, you know, keep a spot in the big leagues. So, you know, he's doing everything that he absolutely can to hang on to his spot. So it'll be interesting to see how this all kind of shakes out.
I read John Heyman's column. He's got this, like, massively in-depth team by team, everything he can possibly gather on anybody he puts into one, like, long column. It's very fascinating. Of course, you know, it's June something, first week in June, so we don't want to speculate too much on what they might do around the trade deadline. So, but let me ask you this, because John had, like, some, you know, speculations. Oh, they could do something with Benoit, with Kennedy. Could they be on the trade block? What about Cashner? What about Ross? But has there been any kind of speculation, discussion, if A.J. Preller's plan and his whole offseason, everything they've done, like, what if this doesn't work? Is it, do you think, I mean, I'm asking you to speculate from, like, 7 weeks from now, but is this kind of a long-term plan, or you think that they could sort of shake things up even at the deadline if this turns out that this roster does not work?
Yeah, you know, I guess my thought process all along when they sort of built this thing was, you know, this was going to be a team that would probably be in position to add pieces at the trade deadline, and I never really considered the other side, but, you know, let's say things go south here, and, you know, they're out of contention, and maybe you're sort of looking ahead to 2016 at that point, and looking at the interesting pieces you have that teams might want, looking at, you know, Ian Kennedy, who, you know, he's going to have to reestablish his value after struggling early here. But, you know, someone like Justin Upton, let's say, who's going to be a free agent at the end of the season, maybe you deal him. You know, you're going to get a lot of hits on a lot of guys. But, you know, I don't think that's anything that's even crossing their mind at this point. You know, I think they really want to get all their eggs in one basket, get all their guys healthy. You know, Yonder Alonso's coming back. Will Myers is starting to hit on the field this week. You know, I think once they get their full component of guys back again, they really want to see what they have and feel like they can make a run at it a little bit. The pitching has been better lately, and then maybe cross that bridge if you get to it. And certainly they hope they don't get to it. And they hope they get to July 31st, and they're looking for pieces to add to the team instead of selling off pieces and thinking ahead to next year. You know, if they're thinking ahead to 2016, in late July, then something's gone dramatically wrong, and this is not at all what they'd hoped for or what they put together. So, but we've seen it before, Allison. You know, the best laid plans, right? You know, so
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see how this thing kind of shakes out. But I think, you know, to a man, they don't think they played their best baseball yet, but you know, it's here we are at the 1st of July, and you know, they're just kind of hanging around a few games under 500, and at some point you have to make a move.
Yeah, and I felt all along like this is a team that is not going to be able to hit a stride for a while. There was a chance that it was going to take them a very long time to gel together just from an offensive standpoint. I really didn't think about the pitching much because that didn't really change a whole lot. But I feel like it would be, I mean, you almost need the entire first half to really assess and get a good handle on how you think this thing may go, because I don't know, I feel like if the Padres were in a different division, it's just because of the Dodgers and the Giants, it's just an extremely hard thing to be a contender in this division. But from just looking at the team, you do feel like they have a big run in them at some point.
Yeah, it's just too many guys who have produced too much in the past for them not to. I mean, I find it hard to believe that all these guys are going to regress at once. I mean, it's just, it's hard to see that happening, especially with guys, you know, who are still young and in their prime. You know, Will Myers, certainly he's been hurt, but, you know, he's 24 years old. Derek Norris is having a big year. Justin Upton, and he's in his prime, and he's off to a great start. And what we've talked about, Allison, since spring training about kind of, you know, thinking this is going to be a monster year for him, and I think he's on his way for that. You know, I don't think there's any reason to think that these guys aren't going to produce. It's just kind of a matter of getting at least more than like one or two of them to do it at the same time. And so far that hasn't happened.
Right. Well, I still have hope for these guys. So we will pay attention to this as it goes along. Thank you, Corey. We will talk to you next week.
Yeah, sounds good, Allison.
Here with my friend and colleague, Steve Gilbert, who has tirelessly, with emphasis on the tired, covered the Arizona Diamondbacks for a very, very long time, very, very, very long time recently, but we'll get to that in a second, Steve. So I want to start with a really bummer of an injury to Tuffy Goslich, who has a tear in his left knee and is out for the year. So how bad is that?
You know, Allison, it's a real blow. I mean, anytime a guy has a season-ending injury, you know, it's always you know, sad to see. But when a guy like Tuffy, who, you know, spent 9 years in the minor leagues to get his first shot as a starting catcher, and you know, I know his average wasn't up there, but he was doing a great job defensively and doing a little bit of, contributing on offense. To have him go out and get hurt like that and be gone for the season, you could just tell that it really kind of hurt those guys in the clubhouse to see, because he's such a hard worker and they respect him so much. And you know, he injured it trying to beat out a grounder in the infield. The throw was a little bit offline, and so he had tried to adjust himself while he was running and, you know, just jammed his left knee, and he crumpled in pain, and you thought, oh, boy, it's really serious. And then he was examined initially in the clubhouse in St. Louis, and they didn't think that there was any structural damage. So it was like this huge sigh of relief. And then he had an MRI the following day during the team's off day in Milwaukee on Thursday, and that's when they realized there was some trouble with the ACL, and then they got that confirmed when they got back to Phoenix yesterday, and he's going to need surgery and will be done for the season.
So that's a tough one. It's hard to lose any regular starter, but certainly the catching is so important, and they have – it's not just being one position on the team. It's working with pitching staff. There's a comfort level. So they're lucky that – I'm fortunate that they have Jared Saltamacchia in the organization, and is he going to get most of the playing time? Is that how that's going to shake out?
Yeah, I think so. They called him up from Reno, and the plan is to have him get the bulk of the starts with Jordan Pacheco backing him up. But as you pointed out, you know, it's tough for a guy, especially since he hasn't been with the organization, so he's never caught most of these guys before, didn't see him during spring training, to then just jump back there and know exactly what to call and know how to, you know, when to push guys, you know, how to handle certain pitchers. It's a real learning experience for Saltamacchia, and I'm sure that Tuffy will spend as much time as he can with him, sitting in on those hitters meetings before games, just trying to, impart some of that knowledge. Not that Saltamacchia doesn't have catching knowledge, but specific knowledge when it comes to the Diamondbacks pitchers.
Yeah, I mean, does that take a long time for somebody like Saltamacchia, who's, I mean, he's clearly been around for a while, so I would imagine that it'll be a little bit of an abbreviated session and that it should be enough for a guy like him.
Yeah, I think Hill is certainly something he could pick up quickly. And again, as long as he's got somebody there, you know, who's had the experience like Tuffy did catching these guys over the last couple of years, that'll certainly help him.
Okay, so let's move on to our friend Archie Bradley, who it's just not really getting any better for him. So I think there was a lot of optimism going into the start on Monday, but it didn't go so well. So what's happening with him?
Yeah, you know, it's just comes down to location with him. Is he that just seems to not have that fastball command, and then that hurts him when it comes to them having to throw secondary pitches, and it's been a struggle for him the last four starts. And he had such a good start to the season after such a strong spring training that I think it's a surprise to a lot of people that he's had these last four starts, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, kind of how they approach this with him going forward. Do they feel like it's something where he can work it out here in the big leagues, or do they think it's something that maybe he needs to go, you know, back down to the minor leagues to just kind of iron out a few last little things? It's going to be fascinating because they worked really hard with him between these last starts, and they, you know, really felt like he was making some progress.
Yeah, and it's hard. I mean, there's a fine line there between letting a guy stay out there and maybe kind of burying himself and getting to the point where his confidence is shaken, but you don't want to just ship him out and you know, have kind of negative effects that way. It's really hard to figure out what to do at a time like this, in a situation like this.
Yeah, absolutely, and you hit the nail on the head with that, because that is the balancing point there. You know, does it hurt his confidence to send him down, or does it hurt his confidence to keep him and have him struggle at the big league level? So they're kind of getting to that point now, I think, where they're probably, you know, they haven't said this, but where they're probably kind of looking at that and examining what would be best for him in the long run.
Okay, let's talk about this game in Milwaukee. 17-inning game, 7-6 loss. First, I want to look at a positive, and that is Vidal Nuno, who pitched 5 1/3 innings of relief, which is basically a start. So that had to have been huge, given everything that happened and how, you know, some of these long games, extra inning games alone, can really wreak havoc moving forward. But a 17-inning game is basically playing two games in one day, which can really, really mess up a bullpen. So how huge was that Nuno came through with that amount of time?
I mean, it was huge. Just look at the Brewers. They ran out of pitchers and had to use their starter for the next day, Matt Garza, in that. So then they had to now juggle their pitching rotation and make some roster moves, whereas the Diamondbacks came out of it without having to use the next day starter and with their bullpen, you know, fairly intact. This is not the first time that Nuno's done this. He came in when Josh Colemanter had that awful start earlier this year, where he lasted just an inning and a third or an inning and two-thirds, and Nuno came in and pitched like 5 or 6 innings, and that was his first day back up in the big leagues. He had just been called up and had a flat tire going to the ballpark, and, oh, hey, by the way, we need you to throw, you know, 5 or 6 innings tonight. And he just seems to excel in that role, and it's such a valuable role, because otherwise, you know, you end up going through your entire bullpen, and that can set you back, you know, for the next 3 games, the next week, can force roster moves and all kinds of things. So when you have a guy that can come out of the bullpen and throw 5 innings, it's hard to quantify what that means.
And it's a bummer because, my goodness, they actually had a 4-run lead after 2 innings. So it looked like this was going to go pretty well. It is Chip Hale, interesting comments just after the game, saying Chase Anderson needs to learn how to pitch with a lead. So that's got to be even more discouraging, just the fact that they kind of had this game in hand early on, and then, you know, 5 hours later, 6 hours later, they're still playing.
Yeah, that is certainly, and I think you and I talked this offseason on one of these podcasts about how, you know, Chip doesn't always take losses very well, and he was frustrated, and that came out in his comments about Chase, about, you know, not being able to pitch with the lead. And it was surprising because he's been, you know, their most consistent starter probably of the whole group there. And, you know, they spotted him that early lead, and it looked good, and the Brewers, you know, had been in a you know, kind of a funk themselves. And then to come back and end up losing that game, certainly was not probably a happy flight, as I like to say, when you leave town with a loss in a nearly 5-hour game.
Okay, so now I want to talk about you for a second. So for the people listening out there, here's kind of how this goes. There are reporters who book flights for the night after a series finale on the road, and there are some who are too paranoid to do that and never leave the night of a final game. That would be me. But there are certain times where you feel a little safer than others. So if you are playing in a ballpark where there is a roof, so you know that weather elements and rain delays are not going to factor in to your schedule. So, like, if you have a game, a series finale in Pittsburgh, and you book a flight that night, then, you know, it's tough luck for you because you are in danger of extra innings and a four-hour rain delay. So when you're in Milwaukee, the chances of you getting out that night are increased by 50% because they have a roof. So apparently... And by the way, we would never complain about our jobs. We love our jobs. We love what we do. We know how fortunate we are to be in this industry. But there are times, every once in a while, that you get a little frustrated. And I would imagine that as you're sitting there watching this game and your flight is about to leave and you get word from a friend that they're paging you, that had to have been a little bit nerve-wracking for you.
Well, I'll tell you, Allison, I initially was going to fly out the next day, and Nick Picoro, who travels along with me a lot of times, the Arizona Republic, also beat writer, convinced me that we could easily make that 6:45 flight with a 1:05 start at Milwaukee.
Oh, my goodness.
And so as the game went on, you start to look at the clock, and you're thinking, trouble, and you start to look at flights, and you start to see that, okay, well, the next flight after that is all sold out, and then that's it for the night. And Nick found this flight that was supposed to leave actually before our flight did, but was delayed by 3 hours, and kept insisting right up until the end that we were going to make this other Southwest flight. So sure enough, you know, you write as quickly as you can after the game. You wish that you had a little more time to kind of flesh out things in a 17 inning game. There's just so much to write about, and we hustled to the airport. Now the Brewers beat writers had flown out that night, but they had their backups covering for them, which often happens when we're at home, and their flight for St. Louis was leaving out of the same gate as our flight to Phoenix, and they were, yes indeed, paging me for that flight to Phoenix, wondering where I was. And so when we finally got to the airport, just in time to make this flight, by the way, through Kansas City to get us home. When we checked in at the gate, the woman at the gate said, "Steve Gilbert, why does that name sound familiar?" And then it took her a couple of minutes, and then she goes, "Oh, I know why, because I was calling your name for about 10 minutes earlier today." Like, "Yep, sorry about that. I'm here now." And so it was quite an adventure, but we did make it home by about 11:30 Phoenix time.
Wow. That's that's pretty awesome, because that's just so stressful. I am so paranoid that I just would never, even when it made all kinds of sense, I just couldn't bring myself to do it. But I guess, you know, you live and learn, and your odds of it happening again have now shrunk to almost nothing, because how often can this happen? So I think you're safe for another, like, 2 or 3 years.
Well, I think it's not going to happen, because I probably am not going to book flights on the same day that we're leaving any longer, because that's enough to scar you for a little while.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, I'm glad you made it home safely, and thank you for your time, and we'll talk to you next week.
Allison, it's always my pleasure.
And I'm here with my good friend, Thomas Harding, who has been observing the Colorado Rockies all season long. And, Thomas, let's start with the unfortunate news that Jordan Lyles had to go on the disabled list with what has to be just an infuriating injury, because it's not even anything good. It's a left toe. So tell us a little bit about how this whole thing unfolded.
Excuse me. Yes, it's a strange injury in that he suffered it, and actually, in a way, the re-injury is not a surprise, because he suffered it during his last start. He backed up his start following that several days. But that's an injury that tends not to go away. In other sports, it's called turf toe. It's a hyperextension of the big toe. And really, it's your landing foot when you pitch. In his case, what happened to him, he was pitching pretty well. He threw a pitch, line drive up the middle by Cody Ash of the Philadelphia Phillies. And he's trying to get out the way. And as he's pushing off to do this, he injures the toe again, has to come out of the game. So Jordan Lyles, I mean, it's been a frustrating time for him, really, ever since he put on the purple pinstripes. Last year, he was hit with a line drive. Last year, he was injured covering home plate, a slide into his hand, and he broke his non-pitching hand. And then this year, two starts before the first toe injury, he gets hit with a line drive on the back of his pitching hand by Albert Pujols, has to leave that game after one inning. So he says that he doesn't feel like he's walking around with, underneath a ladder or with bad luck, but you have to wonder at this point.
And he visited a foot specialist to see if surgery was needed. So this isn't like some thing that they thought would maybe just be able to heal on its own. I mean, is that a possibility down the road?
Was it surgery, you said?
Yeah, surgery.
I guess, although I'm not really sure the long-term treatment for what the long-term treatment for turf toe is. I know there's rest. There's some rehabilitation. The problem is a lot of it is soft tissue damage in there and ligaments in there. So I'm not really sure exactly how that is handled. I would imagine there would be a surgical component, but not know enough about the injury, I just don't know.
Okay, so let's look at the rotation now, which, as we've been talking for a while, is already on the thin side, not a whole lot of depth. So what did it do moving forward without him?
Well, I'll tell you what, the depth has actually appeared in that rotation. Chad Bettis has come up, and the last two starts have been outstanding. Of course, he took a no-hitter into the eighth inning and a perfect game into the seventh the last time out against the Phillies. And the start before that, he went into the ninth inning scoreless. This is a guy who last year really struggled as a reliever, and the Rockies have gone back and forth, whether he's a starter or a reliever. Same thing that happened in college at Texas Tech. He was the starter sometimes, a reliever sometimes, but he's showing why he was drafted in the second round. So he's made a bit of a difference in that rotation, and how they're going to fill it is really interesting. David Hale came up against the Giants and pitched a very good start, and Chris Russon, who replaced Jordan Lyles against the Phillies, he pitched very well that day, and he also had a start in Cincinnati where he only gave up one run. So what's happening is depth is appearing, and lo and behold, John Gray, their number one pick in 2013, has been on just an absolute tear at AAA Albuquerque. He pitched seven scoreless innings on Sunday in his last outing, and the four outings before that, he's climbing back up to what people thought he would be. He's just in AAA very quickly. So there is a shot that they've actually developed some depth in that rotation. You still have some worry about Jorge De La Rosa, who's had a cut on his left middle finger. He's supposed to be back in action, and that should help the rotation. Now he just has to find his form. And you still have some struggles from Kyle Kendrick, who has had some very good starts and some poor starts since coming over this season. But it looks like a little bit more is happening with that rotation and more good things to talk about.
Yeah, and if you look at what's been going on in the last couple of weeks with the Rockies, I mean, they've won a few games here. So which is good news for John Ashford, who has been getting some regular work in the closer's role. A lot of times, one of the problems with a team that's struggling and losing a lot of games, there aren't a lot of safe situations, and then things get a little stale for the closer because he can't find any work. So he's on saves, I guess, in the Rockies' last four wins, appeared in three straight games and 5-7. So that's good news for him to stay fresh.
Yeah, things have kind of turned a bit for this club. So, like I say, I'm looking to see what happens when things stabilize, because early in the season, they were winning games, winning them on the road at a rate that we knew wasn't sustainable. And then the 11-game losing streak, the problem is when you've lost as long as the Rockies have, people believe that once you hit that losing streak, that's what you're going to be for the rest of the year. They have thought that they were a better team than that. I think they've shown it recently. However, there are a couple of things still that are question marks with me. Number one, the starting pitching, it just has to continue to do so. There's been about a 2.5-3 week run of pretty good starting pitching, but will that continue? And also, offensively, they had a road trip where they went 5-1 in Cincinnati and Philadelphia. Those weren't great teams, but they did face very good pitching on that trip, and they scored a lot of runs by virtue of the home run. However, the issue with them has been executing with runners on base, the hit and runs. situations where you need to move the runner. I still want to see that develop a little bit more before I'm really sure what this team is offensively. So it's a good time with the Rockies after some really rough times, but we still don't know who they are yet.
Yeah, I guess in that respect, it is still kind of early. I mean, when you look at the actual schedule, we are in June, so it's really not early. Like, when you're looking at some of these teams that have been really good, you talk about the Twins, the Astros, everyone's kind of scratching their heads and saying, are they for real? But, you know, 50-some games in, you have to sort of think that maybe this is, even if they're not quite this good, that they're pretty decent. But for the teams that are struggling, you do kind of wonder, is this enough time to really gauge exactly what they're going to be throughout the season?
Well, here's the odd thing about the National League West is that the Rockies have suddenly, by winning a few games, found themselves in the 7 to 8 games back backstage, which really is not a whole lot at this time of year. And also, there's been about, what, a game or two separating them and the San Diego Padres. Now, when we go back to the winter, A.J. Preller needed to make a whole lot of moves. And he made them at a rate that the Padres haven't made them in the past. I mean, and I remember hearing the term rockstar GM. So he was the rockstar GM. You look at the Rockies, Jeff Breidich didn't do a lot. He was more the smooth jazz GM, you know, a lot of tried and true things. Some things creative, but really kind of understated. And when you're looking at the standings and there's not much separating those two teams, then you start to wonder. Now, we've got a lot of baseball to play. Padres have a lot of talent. They could find themselves up in the division. But the question is, are the Rockies right? Do they have enough offense? And can they pitch confidently enough to stay in it? We don't know, and it's the National League West, and there's a tendency in that division to stay jumbled for a long time. So if the Rockies can just hang in that, and find some offense, and find not just the power, but the ability to score runs. If they can get something out of Troy Tulowitzki and Carlos Gonzalez on a consistent basis, which hasn't happened, but you'd have to think will happen at some point, then we'll find out who they are. We'll find out if they are good enough to hang with the Dodgers and the Giants and a much more talented Padres team than in the past.
So are you saying that you don't win trophies for winning an offseason?
No, you don't win any trophies. I mean, I remember, weren't the Marlins making a whole lot of noise and trades, and they're going for it. And now the general manager, I guess, is responsible for some of that, is there in the dugout trying to write things. I mean, you don't win an offseason. I've seen years where the Rockies have won an offseason. I mean, you know, go 2000 and 2001, they made a whole lot of moves. Dan O'Dowd was known as Dealing Dan, you know, and he had an exciting nickname. He was a rock star GM back then, and it wasn't until 2007 that they had a contender. They had a winning season in 2000, no winning seasons until 2007 when they went to the World Series. So in a lot of cases, it's my belief that you are who you are. You cannot be a small market club that acts like a big market club. You cannot be a low payroll team that acts like a big payroll team. I think that there are ways to win. Tampa Bay's shown it. Oakland's shown it. They've done it with trades. Tampa Bay's done it with development. You have to be who you are. You can't suddenly change who you are. Now, maybe the Padres, by making the deals, if they can continue to make the right ones on the fly, maybe they can become an Oakland A's type team. But usually teams in that category, they're going to have to draft, they're going to have to develop, and they're going to have numbers of people come through at the same time.
So I want to ask you that my last question here about this outfield prospect who had his spleen removed after an injury on the field, David Dahl, outfield prospect playing for AA, the top pick in the 2012 draft. Oh, my God. So he has a collision, and then he has a spleen removed. That had to have been really scary.
Well, that was really scary, and it was just a really strange day because there's a pop-up in New Britain. And if you recall, Brian Buxton of the Twins ended up losing the rest of the season on a similar play where he had a concussion last year. So a pop-up in the wind, in the daytime, in the same ballpark, and Juan Suriaco, the second baseman, he's trying to avoid David Dahl. The ball lands in no man's land. His knee hits Dahl in the chest area, and Dahl ends up walking off the field, and people are like, you know, he's jarring a little bit. We'll check for a concussion. Is he okay? Then something happened pretty quickly, and I guess when you – start turning different colors of green, people are like, wait, something's really wrong. So they rushed him to the hospital. His dad was up from Alabama, who rode with him in an ambulance, and they ended up going in and stitching the spleen and saving the spleen that way. But that injury, you have to wait for everything to heal on the inside, and you lose the rest of the season. David Dahl, who was actually really coming on as a hitter, he didn't want to lose the rest of the season. I've met this guy. This guy is he strikes me as a good makeup guy, a winner type, a very enthusiastic guy that makes other people around him better. It did not surprise me that he sat there and thought, hey, if they just take this thing out, I can come back and play this year. Take it out. You know, not very many of us raise our hand and say, hey, take out one of my vital organs here. Or I guess it's not a vital organ, but still it's an organ nonetheless. But David Dahl, it doesn't surprise me that he did that. What he'll do for the rest of the season, we'll see. There were people even recently were talking, gee, is this guy going to be good enough to make the major leagues this year? And I was told by prominent people in the organization that, we don't know if he's going to make the major leagues, but he's definitely on his way this year. And then days later, he has the incident, and now he no longer has a spleen.
Wow. Yeah, you're right. These guys are made a little differently from us when it comes to mentally. And so it doesn't surprise me.
Nationwide, people are pulling for this guy because he is one of those characters where when you're building an organization, and it's been a while. I go back to before the 2017 came up when guys like Clint Barmas and Ryan Spielberg, Corey Sullivan, some of those guys, Matt Holliday, when those guys were coming through the organization, you saw something that was a little bit more special than average. And this spring, for the first time since then, there was a group that they won a championship in Asheville last year. I'm seeing something a little bit more than just talented guys that fall by the wayside. So David Dahl's a part of that. He's really an important part of this team's future.
Wow. Well, we'll wish him the best and keep track of him. And thank you, Thomas. We will talk to you next week.
All right, thanks a lot, and who knows what will happen with those Rockies. I mean, we were discussing doom and gloom before, and now we're discussing a team that maybe, we just don't know.
Thanks for listening to MLB.com Extras, the NL West.